Howdy, it's the Texas edition of Party Politics. I'm Jay Iyer, political science professor from Texas Southern University.
And I'm Brandon Rodinghouse, a political science professor from the University of Houston. Thanks for hanging out and talking about politics in the Lone Star State. Been an interesting week, Jay, starting with a sad note from the great city of Austin.
Yes, we've had Austin has been reeling from a series of bombings. Fortunately, it looks like the bomber was captured, then killed by his own bomb. And so that is coming to an end. The law enforcement and the mayor, Steve Adler, have still been cautioning that people need to recognize that they're still not sure how many more are out there. But it's been a crisis averted. And I think a true testament to the effectiveness of our law enforcement, FBI, ATF, really working together to solve a pretty serious crime. Two people died, two people injured.
Yeah, the good news is that it didn't go beyond that, and that, like you say, law enforcement was able to work together to track down this Mr. Condit, who was the individual who they believed to be the perpetrator. So this is, I think, a good end to this affair. The hope is that this is the end of it. But we don't know much about the motives. We can see that this individual had some particular views about homosexuality and clear targeted some individuals who were African-American in the Austin community. So we don't know much about that beyond what we've read, but we definitely are hopeful that this is the end of it.
Brandon, shifting to politics around the state, we just had and been just completed our primaries back here in March. But in the midst of all of this, there was a big hullabaloo around our attorney general and some of the conflict that he's had with school district officials in and around the idea of electioneering. He's accusing school district officials of trying to rile folks up to vote against not just him, but Lieutenant Governor Patrick and the governor and et cetera. So what's going on?
Yeah, so the attorney general has done a couple of things. Well, first, he sent cease and desist letters to certain educators in certain districts to tell them to stop electioneering effectively. He's also had some requests for information through Open Records Acts of the communications about Texas primaries and voting. So this is definitely a concerted effort, like you say, for the attorney general to try to limit the electioneering that these individuals are doing. Partly it's in response to a group called Texas Educators Vote. The idea behind this group was to spur educators to go and vote. Teachers number into the millions, and they have a pretty powerful voting bloc. I'm not sure that it showed up in full force in the primaries, but the worry was that they're going to come out and effectively use the public resources for their own voting. There was a pushback from this investigation, not only from the Attorney General, but also from Empower Texans. The Empower Texans group, which is a conservative-leaning activist group, sent out letters telling individuals that if they saw something like this, then they should alert the Attorney General. In response, teachers and their allies took to Twitter with the hashtag blowing the whistle and talked about all the good things that educators are doing. So my question to you is this escalating this kind of war on public education in Texas?
I don't know about escalating because I think that war is raging. So I'm not sure how much more it can be escalated. But there's no doubt that the Attorney General views this as a sort of a legitimate threat. And I think to his defense, there's no denying that you've had school district officials, teachers, groups, et cetera, trying to rally around certain elected officials to oppose them. And there is a concerted effort. I think part of it was they were specifically trying to target Republican primary voters who were teachers or in public education to vote in favor of Scott Milder and against Lieutenant Governor Patrick, who has now endorsed Mike Collier, the Democrat. And so I think there's real sort of political energy around this issue for public education.
And so also, remember, Joe Strauss implied that he thinks teachers should get involved and to vote for their interest, which was a not-so-subtle way to say that people should vote against those conservative interests.
Absolutely. And Brandon, you raise this. I mean, there are a lot of teachers in Texas. There are a lot of people in public education in Texas. In many counties, they are the single largest employer. Mm-hmm. So I think it is a significant issue if you can rally these public sector workers to come out in favor on one side. It can have a huge impact. I think the Attorney General recognizes that, and he is doing everything in his power by any means necessary.
You're going to have an army of teachers with lined paper and, you know, good job stickers, right, coming for their, you know, political hides, right?
Exactly. But I think the Attorney General is making a mistake. I think he's poking the bear a bit here. I think by doing this, he reinforces the notion that he's coming after them.
That's a good point. Yeah. Well, speaking of coming after, here you've got another interesting dimension to the Cambridge Analytica Facebook scandal, and that involves our very own Senator Ted Cruz.
That's right. Senator Cruz was the first client of Cambridge Analytica, not Donald Trump. He was initially backed by the Mercers, who were the sort of the primary funders of Cambridge Analytica. And they were instrumental in helping him in win Iowa and had been early on. In fact, they boasted about how unlikable Ted Cruz was and how they managed to make him win a race. So my question to you is that if Cambridge Analytica were all that good, how did Ted Cruz lose?
Yeah, right. And that's good. And the question is, you know, what effect it'll have on Senator Cruz's campaign. I don't think it'll have much of an effect. I think most voters don't really care about the process, let alone the mechanisms that help to run that process. But I do think that it could make some libertarian types squirm. The Republican coalition in Texas is made up of, you know, kind of business types, the social conservative types and libertarian types. The libertarian types may be a little uncomfortable with the way this went down, but I think by the time the November election comes around, it's going to be in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, and the one thing I wondered is if it makes Ted Cruz run a more conventional race, less reliant on social media, and be a little bit more gun-shy about getting involved and using some of this sort of psychographic material or other types of material that are part of non-traditional campaigning. Well, Brandon, SB4, the Show Me Your Papers bill, so-called Show Me Your Papers bill, is now in effect. What's going on?
Yeah, this has been an ongoing kind of ping pong battle in the courts. A panel of three Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals judges ruled this week that the state's immigration enforcement legislation, SB4, like you said, can remain in effect. The one part that is still in question or still on hold from this ruling is the provision that punishes local officials for adopting, enforcing, or endorsing policies that specifically prohibit or limit the enforcement of immigration laws. That's something that the judge is allowed to keep in place, and so that is the only part that won't go into effect. I think you'd call this a temporary win at best for supporters of SB4 because we know it's going to go much higher than this to the Supreme Court likely.
Yeah, the key provision there is the term endorse, because essentially what it did is it would limit public officials from exercising their free speech rights. So the idea would be that the chief of police or the mayor of a city, they would be prohibited from enacting a law or enacting a policy that prevented the implementation of SB4, but they could certainly talk about a policy or talk about it in a way saying that SB4 was not good. A prohibition on talking is, by definition, unconstitutional. So the court said, look, you can't do that, but we're going to allow these other things to go in, to sort of kick into place. The Fifth Circuit is one of the most conservative circuits in the United States. We'll see what happens when it goes to the United States Supreme Court. My sense is that a good percentage of this will probably continue to be upheld as constitutional, probably along the same 5-4 lines that we've seen in the past.
Yeah. That's if the Supreme Court takes it, which they might not.
Yeah, which they may not. So it's very likely, I think, that this is going to be around for a while. It's effectively been going on now. We've talked about this before. It plays a big role, I think, not so much in urban counties or counties where, or even some suburban counties. It's a lot of the questions as to what happens when people kind of are traveling between some of these urban centers. And it just really depends on how it's being applied. And I think that's where you got to get into the issue.
The implementation is key. And we've got 254 counties that are all going to do it somewhat differently. So some kind of uniformness is here important. But I think you're right. I don't know that the Supreme Court's going to take this. They've already ruled on some of the provisions about Show Me Your Papers, allowing that to continue in cases like coming out of Arizona. So this may be the end of the road unless the court decides they're going to take it, which I don't think they will.
Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk the never-ending saga that is school funding. Mm-hmm.
Well, Jay, the Constitution in Texas requires and provides for a suitable public education for all Texas public school kids. The scope of that, though, has been heavily debated since that moment and is on, again, the political chopping block. What do we see as a potential outcome here? What is the legislature talking about doing? What are some of the issues that have come up surrounding that lately?
Well, the legislature right now is in the midst of this special school funding task force that's been developed, right? A joint between House members, Senate members, and a few other people. Former Judge Scott Brister is chairing the committee. And they had hearings last week. They took testimony that was invited from national experts, and they allowed the public to weigh in as well. This was really the one sort of accomplishment, if you can call it that, from the last session when it came to school funding.
Ah.
They do not have a plan in place. So here's the big fundamental issue here. Everyone acknowledges that the current system, to use the court's words, is Byzantine at best, and is technically constitutional but financially inadequate. So there's a couple of questions here. One is, will this committee and will the Texas legislature appropriate more dollars for public education? How will they appropriate it? Because part of the issue has been that state contributions have dropped down to 38%. And now more than 60% of all of our school funding comes from local taxpayers. And it's resulted in skyrocketing local property taxes. What's going to happen with the funding formulas? You've got major school districts in recapture. HISD, Austin ISD, next year Dallas ISD are in recapture, where they're sending more money back to the state than they're able to spend here locally. Austin's close to sending almost $1 billion. And now when I say send, they're not physically, they're just not able to reap the benefits of this higher property valuation. They're subsidizing other districts. So right now, the whole question is, how are we going to redo it? But the bigger issue to me is, are we willing as a state to spend more, and how can we do it? Because we have problems in Texas. We are not allowed by law, by constitutional prohibition, to have a state income tax. We are not allowed to have a statewide property tax. So our revenue sources are really limited to sales and charges against oil and gas revenue. So there's a lot less money in to work with than other states have. So we've got a lot of moving targets. We know that the future of the state depends on having a good education system, and we're not there yet.
Yeah, it's one of the most important things that the state does, right? And it has to be done right. The problem is that we are still in a major hole from the 2011 recession, right? The lawmakers in that session cut about $5 billion from the budget for public education. The number of weighed per student, it was about $3,700 in 2011. And in 2016, it was about $3,500. So the spending per pupil has gone down. And that means for most district cuts to things like special ed and bilingual education, things that the state needs to be able to help the people who need help. Like you say, the real question is where the money is going to come from. The legislature has been really unwilling to pony up money to be able to fix this problem. One question is whether or not we might use the rainy day fund as part of that. Now, this has actually come up in the news too, right? The comptroller, Glenn Hager, said that some of the money from the rainy day fund should be invested in the market. Some hardliners say it should just be cash. Some people say we should use it to fund public education because it's raining. So what's your take on using the rainy day fund to be able to put some of this money back?
The purpose of the rainy day fund was essentially to deal with those times when we had shortages as a result of volatility in our taxing system, whether it's a reduction in the amount of money we get out of revenues from sales tax or a reduction in oil and gas revenues or just fundamental changes in the economy that lead to less receipts. We don't necessarily have that. It was not designed as a disaster relief fund. That said, Harvey is a once-in-a-generation kind of event. There are education-related expenditures. The State Education Commissioner, Mike Morath, said the legislature had appropriated for, during Hurricane Ike, $30 million. The damages this time are on a scale more than 20 or 30 times that amount, somewhere in the neighborhood of $700 to $800 million in damages to school districts. And so there's real money that needs to be assigned to it. That is the core function of the state. So yes, absolutely use the rainy day fund to help these school districts out. But the larger question of how we reboot schools and fund schools can only be addressed when we find a suitable statewide funding system.
Yeah, Commissioner Morath said that about 1.5 million Texas children in the district serving them will face about $1 billion in property tax loss because of Hurricane Harvey. But it goes beyond that, right? It could go up to $2 billion because you've got problems like increasing state aid. You've got problems like the hold harmless provision for limiting attendance. You've got decreased recapture payments. So the full bill could end up being about $2 billion. And that's something that would be really tough for a fairly lean budget to find, right? It's not just about identifying that as a priority. It's also about what are you going to cut if you have that. It's also the case that they can't spend more money than they're allowed by law to be able to put in the budget. So the kind of mechanisms that limit the budget generally are going to really tamp down the ability for a lot of money to be poured into this.
Well, Brandon, let's shift gears just a little bit. I want to talk about the issues surrounding special education in Texas. We've talked about this broadly before. Mm-hmm. The TEA was heavily criticized by the way we were dealing with special education. There's now a pot of money to help fund and fix the system. What's going on there?
Yeah, so the TEA has released a long strategic plan after an investigation over these issues. This has long legs, like you say. The context is that the U.S. Department of Education found that the state illegally sent a 8.5% benchmark on the number of students receiving special education services. This is below the national average of about 13%. So the idea here is the TEA has asked for spending in the nature of about $211 million over the next 6 years to identify individuals who need this help and to provide professional development for teachers engaging in special education. Is this enough money? Is this going to solve the problem? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's going to solve the problem, but I think it's a good start. I think the real question is, this has got to be part of the larger solutions we talked about in terms of public education. This is, as you said, $200 million over 6 years. We've already know that we've got this massive hole in the budget from the 2011 property tax cuts that occurred that put in a structural $1.1, $1.2 billion hole in the education budget. We know we've got Harvey-related losses in terms of as it relates to education. All of that together, we're looking at, you know, $2 to $3 billion this next biennium going forward. I'm not sure if we can currently do that under the system that we have in place. And to me, that's the real issue. So what I want to do is let's take a break, Brandon. When we come right back, I want to hear your solution on this public school finance tax question.
So, Jay, like you say, there are some big questions that have to be answered, and really a big bill here to potentially address a lot of the problems that Texas faces. What do we do about public education in Texas?
All right, so I'm going to solve the problem in 30 seconds. No,
yes.
It's incredibly complicated. There was a Houston Chronicle editorial that said it's really not that hard. It's simple. No, it's really, really hard.
Oh, they said it was. They said it was space surgery.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Not rocket science. But it actually is. It is very complicated. To me, I think there's a couple of things. One, we have to get past funding it locally. Texas is too large of a state. It's too diverse with different tax bases. And so we need to do is develop a statewide funding system that is dedicated just to funding schools. My view is that, and I know people don't like to hear this, and it's politically unpopular, but we need to broaden out our sales tax to include services. Texas has Texas taxes goods. They do not tax services. Legal fees, medical fees, getting your hair cut, all of the service-related industries need to be taxed in a more substantial way. That is something that can be done without a constitutional amendment because there's no direct prohibition against it. It's an act of the legislature. That's a start. We also need to recognize that we don't know in the state of Texas how much it costs to actually educate a child because we're in violation of the law. The education code specifically states you have to define what the cost of education is in Texas. We haven't done it in over a decade. They need to do that. Set a solid floor by the state. Allow local governments to fund more to create even more opportunities. Really successful states like Massachusetts have done this. I think that's the framework we need, but we need a better statewide funding system so it's not all about property taxes.
Well, you're the expert in how schools function, and I defer to you on the mechanisms. But I do think you're right that some of these rules have to be changed. A lot of them are decades old and have to be allocated in ways that make sense for a 21st century Lone Star State. It's also, I think, inevitable and unavoidable that we have to have more money put into this. And that means maybe not the $2 billion that the, you know, education commissioner said, but it's going to have to be a pretty sizable chunk of money from general revenue that's going to go into this. We can't count on the federal government to bail out the education system in Texas the way that they've bailed out like criminal justice or the Texas Commission on Environmental Qualities, these other kind of institutions that have kind of a shared federal state responsibility. This is a Texas problem, and so it needs Texas solutions. If you're going to have a Texas solution, you need to have buy-in. And my fear and my read on this is that there's not enough political will or political consensus on what needs to be done. So it doesn't matter what we do, in effect. If there's not a consensus that it's important and that there's a central set of goals that we have to be met, then it's never going to happen. So until that happens, until a leader comes up that can make that case, I don't know that it's going to happen. It probably needs to come from the top. That's probably the governor, maybe lieutenant governor. And the divergences in the Republican Party and the clear divergences between the Republican and Democratic Party make that really tough right now.
Well, that's a wrap for this week. Remember, we do a weekly national politics episode too, which you can download on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Party Politics is recorded in the George B. Geary Performance Studio at Houston Public Media.
Thanks to our super producer, Edel Halland, who always ensures a quality education, and to our engineer, Todd, the Commissioner Holslander.
I'm Jay Iyer.
And I'm Brandon Rottinghouse. We'll see you next week.